You're listening to Safety Corner, powered by TCL and S1, for workers, by workers. Online and in-person health and safety programs and training available in 10-plus languages. Reach out to them at www.mys1.ca and DM them at my_S1 for more information.
Bon dia, everybody.
What's going on, Phil? Bon dia.
You know, another awesome day here at Safety Corner. We got a special guest in today.
I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, me too. I'm sure it's going to be a great conversation.
Yeah. So, you want to introduce or?
No, you go ahead and introduce.
Why do I have to? You're the one that you're connected. How did you guys connect to begin with? We got Chris Campbell here from Local, what is it?
Local 27. Carpenters okay. Union, Local 27.
So all of a sudden, all the union members that are listening, the ears are picking up, right?
Uh-oh, that here you go. Bring it on.
But I do want to say, Chris, thank you very much for coming into the show. And yeah, there's definitely a lot of things that are on workers' minds and, you know, and the workforce. And a lot of people are looking towards the unions that kind of, you know, see which direction things are going in and how things are happening out in the construction force. And thank you very much for coming in today.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. And thanks to Josephine for connecting us.
Josephine.
Through email, you know, Manny and Philippe and the team here. So thank you for having me. And this wouldn't have been possible without her sending that email over.
So. Shout out to the JS group.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Josephine, if you're listening.
But she will. She's a fan.
Nice.
Which is nice. But I guess let's do a little intro for those that don't know local. If you don't know Local 27, you work in construction, then you've been under a rock for a while. But let's introduce Chris and tell us all about yourself and let's get her started.
Yeah. So, okay. So my name is Chris Campbell. I'm the president of Local 27. I'm also the EDI coordinator for the Carpenters Regional Council. My journey spanned about 35 years. Started as a first year apprentice, complete my apprenticeship, wrote my Red Seal exam. So I am a Red Seal carpenter, taught at the College of Carpenters when they were down Signet Drive. Worked on a few jobs as a supervisor, became a representative, an area rep for Local 27, did that for 17 years, and was appointed EDI director maybe about 5 years ago. And a few years after that, I was elected the vice president. The president stepped down and I became the president. So nice. That's in a nutshell my journey over 35 years. Proud representative of the union, proud to have had the opportunity to take a leadership position. And as always, I always want to thank my Canadian district vice president, Mr. Jason Rowe, all the members of the executive board, and the membership, the most important folks, sure. The membership of my carpenters union.
Yeah, no, and it's great to hear that you come from the trades.
Yes.
Right? Just out of curiosity, how was safety like back when you were a carpenter? And
well, you came here, what is it? Like you came here 35 years ago, immigrated?
I came here at 18 years old. Did a few odd jobs here and there. I remember one of my jobs being the dishwasher at Casey's restaurant. I don't know if it's still there at Yorkdale. That was a long time ago. Did a few other janitorial jobs and factory jobs down in South Etobicoke. This man that I respected so much, he was like a mentor. He says, Chris, get into the construction trades. And I went and applied at the plumbers union, the electrical union, and the carpenters union. And the carpenters called me first, then the plumbers, then the electrical. But I was already engaged in training and so on at the carpenters union. So I just stick with it. And that's where my career started. And, you know, and we're probably going to get into this later. It's very important to have mentors, people that will hold your hand, explain to you not just how to do the job, but how to work with other people, how to get along, how to make, how to adjust to other people's culture and nuances and behavior, right? That's a big thing when you jump into a big multicultural industry you need someone to now and then sit and talk to and motivate you and show you the way. So, you know, thanks to everyone that has helped me along my journey.
Oh, yeah. So when you got in there, though, I guess it would have been 32, 33 years ago you started in the union?
I've been a member for about 35 years.
So when you got in there.
So I'm 21 years old.
No, I get it. We are as old as we want to think we are. But what was the workforce like then? Because, I mean, you're going that far back. I'm assuming that it was probably heavily more European of a workforce.
Yes, that's a nice way of putting it. Most jobs, even when I first got sent out from the hiring home, the training center, most jobs I went on, I was probably the only black apprentice.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. Yeah,
but you know, I was too focused on working and getting a paycheck on Fridays. Because my focus was to make sure I could pay the rent, make sure I could pay the car payment, make sure I could take my girlfriend out or something, right? So the politics on side, for me it was different. Whatever stuff is being said that today would be very controversial, or stuff that happened that today would cause a lot of crap. Mm-hmm. For me, I just let it go in and go out and focus on
Were there some money. That willing to teach?
Absolutely. Like I remember one of my first jobs were working down at the Hearn plant. Mm-hmm. The Hearn plant down by
on
Cherry
the East
Street.
End. Yeah, yeah.
Cherry Street. Yeah, they were decommissioning the Hearn plant, and you had people from you know, Alberta to Newfoundland.
Not the healthiest environment either, huh?
No. A lot of asbestos removal.
Yeah.
And so
it was loaded.
And so these are the men. And a lot of men, I remember people coming over directly from Ireland and England.
Yep.
And these are the men that taught me how to build the scaffolding, right? So yeah, you have to give kudos to these men that taught you the trade at that point in your life, right? Whether it be the scaffold, whether it be the Italians teaching you formwork, because back then, I think in my mind, they were more Italians than Portuguese. Yeah. Now it's a lot more Portuguese. So those are the folks that, you know, taught you the different aspects of the trade through the different, through various stages of your life, right? Then you have things you adapt to become a supervisor, people's style that you adapt, and how to communicate or learn to understand folks by not just what they're saying, but looking them in the eye, mm-hmm. watching their body language, and mm-hmm. learning a lot more about them than what comes out of their mouth. So that helped me in supervising and managing people. And then the union rep, you get thrown into that because you have no experience in that. But I think what I learned about that too is to be more politically correct at all times, where you're talking to a construction worker, you can say, "What the, whatever. We need this get done. The concrete's coming. Look, you know, this is not a playground. We're here to produce." Da da da. You can verbalize it, you know, just as you feel. But then you become a union rep. Then you have to kind of tone it down and polish it and approach things differently. So you've been through different stages of your life that resulted in who you are today, right? So, yeah. And
experiences shape a worker, shape a person, shape a human, right?
Let me ask you, Chris, though, why do we have to be politically correct on a job site?
Well, things has changed. And
did the work get done correctly back then? Did it get done efficiently? Did it get done? Did people provide a proper skill? Did they provide a hard day's work and then deliver what they said they were going to do, and then they were compensated for it, even though the banter in between all that was politically incorrect at the time? But now today, why does it have to be that way today if the work is still being provided in the same manner, if not more efficiently?
I think in retrospect, the work got done. The buildings are still up. You can, mm-hmm. This is proof that it right. got done. Mm-hmm. And it's getting done today. But I think if you want to make it better, you want to be more inclusive, you want something basic as having the door more open for probably women on site, right? You wouldn't express yourself. You wouldn't want someone to express themselves a certain way in front of your mother, your daughter, no, your niece, etc.
Everybody's different. So
it helps if you genuinely change the way basic stuff, like change how you express yourself, to and that helps to be more inclusive of women in the trade, of people of other cultures in the trade. Because people, things back in my days, like I said earlier, I was more focused. You could come in and jump and scream and
you want to learn the trade.
I just want to learn the trade. I just want to make money.
You connected learning the trade with making money. So the more I learn, the more skills I obtained, it more opportunity came my way where I can get the next project and the next promotion, so to speak.
And more respect.
For sure, 100%.
Because over the years, people see you work. People see you produce, yes. right?
The name gets around.
They will come and ask you to come to leave the crew or the job you're on to come and work for them. They're doing it based on your productivity, your ability to communicate and lead the team, yeah. right? But to go one step further, if you want to be more inclusive, right, whether it be women or other groups, it helps. It helps for you to be culturally sensitive. So it's things are evolving, and I hope it's for the best.
Who's it helping?
Well, it gives you a bigger pool of workers to choose from locally, and that's probably a good thing.
I asked the question why, and I don't really think there's an answer for it.
Yeah.
Right. And the reason I asked the question why is that, in my opinion, I feel that the workforce that you grew up with, that most of us grew up with, is changing. There's like, I grew up with my dad being a mason, brick mason, and it was all Italian and Portuguese.
Yeah.
But then when I got into construction, I started doing project, I couldn't find an Italian and Portuguese mason. I kept on coming across Irish and even Middle Eastern. And I was like dumbfounded by that. But they proved their worth with their skill set. And then I hired them, and then I hired them again. But in my mind, I had this image of the construction force being Portuguese, Italian, would handle brick and concrete. That was it. But that's not how it is today. Regarding the woman argument, like the woman discussion and the inclusion, things like that, what I find interesting is that we have a workforce here. I know that Canada, certain stats, we've brought it up on the show, they say it's 14% is female working in the construction industry. Right.
Yeah, that's
I disagree with it. I don't think it's correct. And I've brought up an argument saying that the government of Canada requires a double digit number to be shared to the public. So that's why I honestly believe it's a 5 or 6% of a workforce. And I think the majority of those women are mostly admin, more on the design and engineering and administrative
stuff. No, because I did a follow-up and I went to Stats Canada because they wanted some, from our last show, we did a show just on the tampons and the menstrual pads and women in construction, who those are going to apply to. And then I did a follow-up in terms of stats and stuff, and I went to the Government of Canada website and stuff, and it says there, based on the stats, number of workers based on 2023, and we'll do it on the next show, you're looking at 13% women in construction, right? And that's classified. I'm guessing they capture all of this information somehow, some way, right? But to go back to your point, too, with cultures and stuff like that, Manny, Canada has a long history of different cultures working in the construction industry 100%. During different times and during phases. And if you go back farther enough, just like the Asians that came to Canada and helped build the railroad, you know, they were taken advantage of. And if you look at the Portuguese, when the Portuguese came, you can even go the Italians. And when the Italians came, it was the Irish and the English. And it was the Italians that were going in the holes to dig the trenches out and were treated poorly by the people that were in power, I guess. Right, and then the Portuguese came in, and then the Portuguese were the ones going in the hole, and the Italians were the ones running the companies, right? And I feel like there's a bit of a cycle in construction in terms of different cultures and how their skill set is being applied, right? And, you know, what I guess there are cases, and especially with my history as being an MOL inspector, there are cases of certain groups. And I don't want to say stereotypes, but like Portuguese are great with concrete and Portuguese are...
Yeah, there's stereotypes.
Right? There's a bit of stereotypes there that come along with different groups in the construction industry. And, you know, you've been around construction long enough, you know, one thing you learn, it's diverse. It's a bunch of cowboys sometimes. Everyone's there to get money and be productive and stuff like that. And there was actually something I saw on Instagram a couple days ago, man, and it renewed my faith a bit in the whole workforce and stuff like this. And it was two guys on a construction project. And it was this one guy speaking in Patois, I'm guessing, in Jamaican accent, yeah. Patois.
Yeah.
And he was speaking to the Jamaican guy. And he was like, hurry up, man. And I'm not going to try to do a Jamaican accent, but, you know, he was speaking to the guy and you could tell he was riling him up. Does the guy not come back and make an own video, like a clapback video at the guy? And I said, man, but it was like all in good fun.
I know, but there's nothing wrong with that.
No, I thought it was hilarious,
but,
man.
But it also, there's something wrong with that when it comes to political correctness.
Yeah, political correctness.
That's the problem that I have with it.
It's like the wind, man.
So like Portuguese and Italian would always ban. Listen, I think I could write a book on how many Portuguese jokes there are out there.
There's a lot.
And there's probably an Italian version that's just the exact same jokes. But they're jokes. And I honestly believe that in the construction industry, it's about an approval process. It's about like we banter at you, we discuss a certain way, we treat you a certain way because we like you. We see skills in you. We want you to be a part of this team. Right? That's all it is. But with the woman thing, I'm all for women being in construction, 100%. I would love to see more. The problem that I have is that a lot of the government funding is solely going towards getting more women in construction. But if I were to go out and all of a sudden you ask 100 women, how many of you want to get into construction? You know, you're probably going to get that 5 to maybe 10% are interested in getting in the construction. But if you're only taking your funding and feeding it to majority of women and not feeding it to the rest of the group, then there's going to be a disconnect. Because now, you know, a few years ago, I had someone reach out to me, an electrician. There was a program that was designed by the government to get more people into the electrical trade. And all the funding was going towards DEI initiatives. And anybody who was outside of that initiative wasn't allowed to get that funding. That's a misstep, in my opinion, because you've got Portuguese people that look at their sons or their cousins or their family members. You should get into construction. They're promoting getting into the trades without any government assistance. And they're coming from, you know, cultures that have done that, whether it's European, whether it's Caribbean, whether it's Asian, whether it's everything. But when all the government funding is going exclusively to one group and it's avoiding the other groups, I think you're missing lots of talented people that have skills that, if given the opportunity, they would get into construction.
That's a good point. That's a good point. There's, I think, at my training center and community organizations that we have relationship with, I think the door is open to, you know, men just as much, but they are circumstances and really small when you look at the big number of males that get in. It's really small in proportion to the men, the amount of women that get a chance.
And they
have different needs, different
challenges,
challenges that they need help with, right? And
what do you mean, the women?
Yes,
in what respect?
Well, maybe family issue, right? They're usually the individuals in the family that takes care of the kids, right?
So true.
They're usually the folks that probably need assistance when they get on site. They're probably folks who you probably have to make a special provision for to help them to initially get started, right? So as a union president, if you bring in just hypothetically 100 men, and by assisting hypothetically 5 women, give them a little bit more incentive, give them a little bit more assistance to get going, I don't see a problem with it, right? It's just maybe that it's played up over and over, so it gives the impression that it's that they're treated way better. But when you really get in the classrooms and you look at the numbers, right, not just one isolated case where you have a class of 15, 20 women and we're promoting them getting started, right? And then we ignore the other 20, the other 15, 20 classes of the traditional folks like men like you and I that are in the class. So if that will help change the numbers from 5 or 6%, I think around there, the reality of it, like you say, not include administrative and you know, architects and engineer. I think the numbers is way lower than that. If that gives half the other half of the population a chance to get in the trades, then.
But I get it, yeah. To the point, like, listen, I've grown up, I'm the white guy.
Yeah.
In my group, I grew up with all kinds of cultures, whether it's Jamaican, Korean, you know, Vietnamese. I grew up and I loved it. I loved it for the food, because as a teenager kid, you go visit each other's houses and you're introduced to so many amazing food, right? And I love that whole part of it. But it's just, I think that the playground should be level,
yeah.
In my opinion. It should be level. My concern is, and I've been to a meeting years ago before I started the shows. They had an initiative to get more indigenous women into construction, and talk about a niche market. Like, that's an extremely niche market of people that actually want to get into construction, but they were funding a lot of money to get that specific niche into the construction industry. And it didn't work because they didn't want to get into construction, but the government wanted to kind of push this message about, we need to get more indigenous women into construction. I'm all for it, but if they don't want to come into construction, well, there's other groups of people that want to come into construction, but you're not helping them out, you know, giving them opportunities, then what are they going to do? And I want to bring up another point about, I know a lot of people talked about there's a shortage of labor.
Yes.
It's not true. Like, it's, we know that there's no short, there hasn't been a shortage for 10 plus years, right? There's a lot of hardworking individual, mostly men and women, because of the percentages, that are not working right now. They're struggling. They're looking for work, right? My concern is, because I've interviewed 700 plus people, a lot of them have been youth, right? And we know that the core audience in construction right now is that 24 to 45. That's that core audience that we have, the highest percentage of workforce, right? Yeah. Mostly male. It's the 95-5. You can split it that way. The problem with that, and what I see coming down the pipe real quick, and it's something that I'd like to get your opinion about regarding the union, they're not retiring. They're going to leave. So these kids that are coming in at 24 already anticipating leaving before they're 40, where you grew up, I grew up, and Phil grew up, and a lot of people who listen to this show, our dads, our uncles, our grandfathers retired. I've got Jim Carrick, who's still on the job site. He's 70 years old, right? So it's like that group of older tradespeople, they're going to retire and go off. And we talk, right? For every one that leaves, we need to replace five of them with them, right? But the problem is, the five that we're trying to replace with, they're going to leave the industry, and they're going to leave for better opportunities, financially speaking. That's my concern. And that's going to happen in the next 5, 10 years.
There's definitely challenges with different age groups. And a lot of it, I think, comes down to opportunity too, right, Manny? You know, if I have an opportunity to go right and I have an opportunity to go left, I have choices.
Yes.
Right. But I think for a lot of perspective too, you know, some groups coming into construction don't have a choice. And we've talked about this on previous shows, illegal workers. And, mm-hmm. you know, you're here, you're working. Canada. We did a little, we filmed like Tim Hortons. So it was insane, Chris. It was a pickup truck would come into Tim Hortons.
You know the situation, right?
Yeah. And it'd be 30 or 40 people swarming this truck. You know, trying to get jobs.
But it's the treatment of these workers that we have a concern with, right?
Of course. Yeah. And the treatment, when you start looking at human rights and stuff like that, and challenges and different groups coming in and people being taken advantage of. And, you know, there are a lot of challenges in the construction industry. And, you know, there are people in the construction industry that are trying to tackle some of these challenges, right, with different initiatives. And I think that kind of opens up, you know, our next segment here on just overall a bit about Local 27 and some of its current memberships, you know, some of the major projects that you guys are working on, some of the current initiatives, right? And definitely some of the current challenges being faced by the local, by a lot of locals and by a lot of workers.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you guys have a 10,000 membership base.
Yes. Yes.
So that's just the one union. No, the 20.
That's just the one of the unions within our council, and that's because you have You have Local 27, mm-hmm. which is General Carpenters. Mm-hmm. And then you have Local 675, which has almost the same amount of members, but they're the drywallers and interior mm-hmm. finishing. Back to what you were saying, though, the government, just like they've pumped millions of dollars into promoting women in the trade, they also do that with apprentices, OEAP students, right, to try and get them integrated. You and I know that when you're 18 years old, there's no way you know what you want to do for the rest of your life. You
that's,
think so.
But you're throwing all this money at this individual.
But the government first needs to at least expose the young people to some of the opportunity there, just like you do with college and university.
I would suggest take that money and give it to the mentors. I've been advocating for a mentorship program funded by the government to pair a young prospect working person with an older person, whether they're in their last years of construction or they've already retired. That person has all that knowledge in their head. They may not be politically correct, but they have a world of knowledge in their head that they can share to any individual. They can take on five of those kids and bring them on. But that's not happening. And I bring up the OEAP thing because it's, what is it up now? 71 million they're getting? Per year?
Up there. So
I don't know what the numbers are.
But you have to expose them.
If you expose them to the wrong thing, if I'm exposed to the wrong experience, then I've already formed an opinion of I don't want to be in this construction industry.
You're exposed to the various trades, and it's up to you to choose whatever you want to get in if that's what you aspire to. So there's the OEAP, and then there's people who change their career over and over throughout their lives. It's not just construction, it's every industry.
But you get a lot of young people changing their career based on funding resources.
That is an issue too, but again, how many young people at 18 to 20 years old
know
what they want?
They don't. But, but 35 years ago, you had parents and uncles saying, listen, you're not staying home, you're coming with me. You're going to get on the job site. It was illegal, but you get a lot of people share stories here. They're talking about, listen, I got started when I was 13. And I'm like, yeah, it's illegal. Like I remember a trowel being hit on my head by my dad because he was trying to teach me how to lay bricks. And I couldn't for the life, I know how to do everything else, but I couldn't for the life of me lay bricks. And I tried to, but my dad, I couldn't get it. And I respected his skill set. My point is, and I even got to the point where I brought on an OEAP student. And I said, they gave me, the phone book of paperwork to sign. And I said, listen, you got to give me a hand to fill this out. Like, I don't know how to fill this up. So they actually ended up filling it out. They showed up on the job site. I met the kid. He was a fan of mine on social media. He worked with me. We were doing some work on a particular project in the Etobicoke area. Great client of mine. I was side by side with this kid doing the work with him. We were moving rocks. We were digging. We were doing. I was not the guy just standing there asking him to do the work. I was doing it. The next day I get a text from the kid. This isn't for me.
Just like
that's going to happen. Yeah. But at least
I contacted OEAP, but I was like, dude, I just got this text. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah. But at the end of the day, you can the government and the local residents can look back and say, yes, we did expose the kid to it. We did give them a fair chance to start. Just like you said, people change their careers along the way. Some will stay with it and some won't. If that doesn't work, well, worst case scenario, you may have to go abroad and bring folks in, but you want to know that your son and daughters got a fair hit at the can, right? So, yeah, that's I think the government should spend
these kids.
Spend
they the form money. Their opinion too quickly if they're taught by the wrong individual, and if there's a message behind it. That's where I'm going with the political correctness,
and that's where you come into where you say you need a mentor. You need 100% to hold.
I know thousands of mentors that are on the verge of retiring or have already retired, and I love speaking to them. I don't care if they make a Portuguese joke or I don't care if it's over a glass of wine on a job site. I don't care because the vault of knowledge that they have is far more valuable. And if that kid is given that direction, that kid they'll thrive in construction. They will aspire to be somebody in construction.
And just to throw in too, we got to remember too, mentorship comes from different avenues, right? It can come from school. It can come from a stranger on a job site.
For sure.
It can come from your parents.
Yeah.
Which I think a lot of it, like I got my first timer at the age of 5. I'm sure you probably got your. I was working construction and doing odd jobs 12, 30. Like you get into that really young, depending on your culture and depending on, you know, the influence that you have on you. And I've done some of these training sessions and teaching at high schools, you know, and we're there talking about safety and the Occupational Health and Safety Act and the rights of workers. And you have a mixed bag of students that are anywhere between 16 and 18 years old. And like, who of you guys, are any of you guys employed? No. Any of you guys know what you want to do? Oh, I want to be an influencer, and I want to do this, and I want to,
There's too much competition right now.
Well, there might be a lack of a lot of opportunities in different sectors, right? But new sectors are always emerging, and new opportunities are always emerging, right? But, you know, and you hear it on the job sites, and you hear it from different employers, just because my clientele lists and stuff. It's like, man, you know, you hired these kids, they come in. What are they called? Gen X's now? Or
I have no idea.
I don't know. Right. And they're like, man, their work ethic isn't there. Their attitude isn't there. You know,
but they're not all like that.
No, of
like,
course not.
I've met kids.
Of course not. There's two sides to every coin.
I did a job, and there was a 21-year-old we were underpinning. Not the easiest job. Mm-hmm. Underpin in the dead of winter. Like, it was frozen water once we hit the water. It was not an easy job. But everybody had smiles. Everybody was warming up. I tried to accommodate as best I can. And there was one kid who just stood out, 21 years old, short kid. And I would just watch him, never complained, always hungry. And now, you know, I watch him. I talk to the supervisor. I talk to the owner. And I'm like, what's with this kid? Like, he goes, he's an anomaly. Like, this guy, he's got this work ethic. He just wants to learn. He wants to appreciate the skill. And we're doing hard work, right? And you fast forward now, I think it's been 6 or 7 years now. He's making over 200 grand working for a company. He's got benefits. He already has 2 rental properties. He's already paid off his house. This is a kid in his late 20s now.
That's work ethic, Manny. Yeah,
so right? I know that's 100%. And the thing is, he came from a dad who's from the concrete side of things, right? But unfortunately, like, lack of a better word, he's a white kid. He's an Italian kid, right? That's what it is. And it just, he never got any benefits from the government to do this. He just got pushed by non-politically correct, I guess, people. I think he was just hungry for the work. I think you have to pair up. There has to be a construction Tinder. Where we pair up the mentors with the kids. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Manny,
I'm sorry, but there has to
don't
be.
Don't apologize. That's a great idea.
I think it's us. I think the older guys would go and sit there and going, yeah, you're going to be a good fit for this person. And you'll be a great fit.
And that is why we have started some mentorship and mentee training at our office, right? We get funding from the government, and we're putting on training programs to help folks to mentor our apprentices. We're not just leaving it by the wayside. Say if it happens, it does. It happens or not, but we actually. Making plans to pair the apprentices up with people who have traveled that journey mm-hmm. of the industry. So we're taking steps. Or College of Carpenters, the training center, you know, they do safety training, and you talk about safety earlier on. Yes, mm-hmm. If you compare 30 years ago or 50 years ago, you mentioned Italians and Hogs Hollow, I think that's what you were referring to, where they died in the tunnel. You talk about the death that happened over Christmas on the swing stage. Falling to your death. But, you know, we're learning from it, or different training centers. I talk about the carpenters because I'm a carpenter. I am not going to talk about another trades. But yes, I think all the training centers are taking safety training serious, and is why there's a big reduction in the amount of accident, and that it's going to happen. You're going to have mechanical failure. You're going to have someone that's not alert on a specific days, but in general, when you look at the numbers, they are coming down, and I think a lot of that is from the training that we're now doing and improving how things are done at our training center. And then you have the management, the company owners, the supervisors. They're more in tune with protecting their workers mm-hmm. than before, right? So things are improving, and we talk about safety at CCAT, the College of Carpenters, and we talk about apprenticeship training, right? Apprenticeship training where encouraging and our members to complete their Red Seal exam, right? That's the ultimate thing that you want when you sign up for a formal apprenticeship. Talk about other specialty course, like the formwork course, mm-hmm. the scaffolding course, the mass timber course, right? We adapt That's to the market of what's out there, right? So yeah, with the union and the training center and the membership, we're constantly working on improving things and making things better. But some things are unpredictable. Interest rate. Last year, interest rate went up. It's coming down, but it had a big impact Massive, on the construction industry. And then, a few months ago, you have a lot of changes happening down south, and that kind of make things unstable. I mean, the government down south make things a little bit unstable. You know, hopefully, it'll level off, but who knows, right?
The instability actually started here in Canada.
Yeah, with the tariff, who knows where things are going to go. But with all that happening, hopefully we get a government that will, stand in solidarity with us and grow the construction industry and make things continue to be prosperous, right?
Yeah, no, so. Definitely when it comes to the construction industry and just my history, I've never seen the construction industry the way it is right now. Not in terms of all the items you were discussing, but I'm talking about job security, projects, the slowdown in low-rise residential. And I think we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. That's on the next slide, just to talk about the construction slowdown. But it is definitely on everyone's mind, right? And with the elections coming around here in Canada and, you know, people determining which political party they want to support, et cetera, and to each his own. But blue collar. We're definitely blue collar.
I want to start a blue collar party. I think you'd do well. What do you think, Chris?
I think
a blue collar farmers, truckers, construction workers, union workers. I'm not putting words in your mouth. I'm just saying I think it would do well.
As a construction representative, one of the theme or the saying we have at our meetings is, we support those who support us. If you support our membership or training center, employment for our members, then we support you. Mm-hmm. Right? At this point, we don't look at whether you're red or blue or orange. No, we support those who support us, who can help us to mm-hmm. grow our membership and our industry.
And I think, even looking back, a lot of unions, and you're correct in saying it, Chris, they support the political party that supports them or has a plan to help the members of those unions, right? And we've seen unions, you go back, they'll stand on the orange side and then they'll stand on the red side and then they'll stand on the blues. And again, I totally get it, right? And you want to make sure that you're covering all your bases and making sure that, but again, the current situation, the current climate right now out in the field and in people's homes and the conversations they're having at home and looking at their bills and looking at these things, I think the crazy part about it is like you rewind 3 years ago or 4 years ago, come to construction, this is the place, you make lots of money and this and that. And then all of a sudden, fast forward, I'm at home unemployed. Right? Yes. Which is, I think, the most mind-boggling thing out of everything that's happened. Well, not everything, but in this aspect in the last few years, right?
The interesting thing about this show, because in the beginning, I never had a lot of union guests. And then I had one. No, and then I had one. Oh. you're one of many. You're more of a member or manager. No, sorry. So you're one of you're the first executive union on the show, which is great, and I'm very grateful for that. But once you have one individual, I had a comedian on the show, and all of a sudden I had a rash of comedians on the show, and I like laughing about construction. They all came from construction, but I had one, and then I had another, and I had another, and it's great to say that you guys got a 10,000 membership base, and you've got another 10,000 membership base, and I think that. I'm trying to think of what other local that Barrett was on, but they're up to 100,000. I can't remember. There's a lot of members, right? Mm-hmm. But my question is, how many of them are at home right now during these hard economical times? I'm hearing is half.
Well, depending on the sector, right? High rise and low rise. Sorry, Chris, I don't want to take the answer.
No, say a little closer, Chris. Or just pull the mic closer.
Some of it depends on the sector and whether it be 100 or 200 or 300, whatever it may be, we don't want any of our members to be sitting at home. No. Right now, yes, we are being affected by the the interest rate that caused some of the projects to be on hold. We are. I can see us being affected by tariff if some of these tariffs go forward, right? But whichever government is in, or whichever government is already in, it'd be provincial or federal. It's important that they take measures, take steps to ensure that the construction industry is vibrant, because with us being vibrant, it represents growth, right? New projects going up. And when you have new projects going up, it means new furniture, new cars, new everything, yes. Right? And, for instance, you put a subway station here. Within a couple of years, you have half a dozen condos around it, yeah. Right? And you put half a dozen condos, guess what? You're going to need the infrastructure to follow. So the government has a big role to play in this. And I think, if they look at it from that perspective, not just to throw money, but also pay attention to, yes, the population is growing, so you need to fund these growth. And so if you have a government that takes that into consideration, in my opinion, not speaking from the perspective of a union, right? With my personal opinion, it's a lot of it is in their hands, and I hope they will consider that and use that as a measuring stick, sure. to how to make the economy stronger.
But with a lot of these initiatives too, Chris, and I think the workers and even the citizens, the population, over the last few years, we've seen a lot of headlines. Billions of dollars go here and millions of dollars go here, and lots of money and big numbers get thrown around, right? And I think a lot of the concern is also, how are these things being executed? Is there a metric? Are they using, what measuring stick are they determining whether or not their game plan was effective and well executed and efficient and actually achieved the goals that it was designed to achieve?
Well, that's right? The issue. I don't think there's a review process, and I'll just give three letters, LRT. A lot of money was put into that.
That one's a tough one.
A lot of money was put into that to grow.
I take it you're talking about the Eglinton line.
Yeah, of course.
Yes. Of course.
Well, you know as much as I do that it's hard to predict what you're going to face when you drill down to a subway station, when you bore the ground along the line, right? You may do a few tests here and there, but when you get under there, you don't know if it was a shipyard from 100 years ago. You don't know if it was a burial ground.
What's construction the best at? What's construction? What's the one thing that construction is the best at? Solving problems. Solution solvers. That's what the construction is. So to dig in this country, in this city, specifically in Toronto, I don't think there's a single thing that we haven't discovered that we haven't already discovered on a previous project. It's there. I've had engineers on the show, and we talk about it's the bureaucracy associated with it. There's new ways of doing things. I've already hollered on this show several times. There should be a tunnel from the 427 to the DVP.
Okay.
Bypass the whole core. Get to east and west. But I don't want it built by the politicians of today. I want it built by the construction workers of today.
Are you talking about a tunnel that someone is suggesting? Or are you talking
I'm suggesting building a tunnel that goes right through the whole
city. We come up with random ideas on this show.
But it was just ironic because Ford started announcing months after I started expressing that he wants to build a tunnel over the 401. I think there should be an elevated deck on the Gardiner. I think that you want to build a city, you have to build ways to get into the city. And you cannot just, and I go back to the whole, you're only pumping money into one thing. Chow right now in Toronto, it's all about green. It's all about bike lanes. It's all about this crap, right? You need to still move vehicles. You still need to get workers to get down to these buildings. Every single building that's built in this city has to be serviced by a technician, by a union rep, by somebody. And if they can't get their vehicles into the core because of the way this... Clear example, King Street was a congested artery. They did a whole study, spent taxpayers' funding for the study. They discovered the streetcar was the problem. What did they do? They eliminated the cars.
So that's
so there's not a review process on what's going on. And I would want to see more blue collar boots on the ground people speaking up. Listen, here's my opinion about King Street. This is what I think we should do. I would speak to the workforce. You guys, I'm sure you guys do it. You speak to your members. You talk to your members. You ask them what's going on. What's on the job site? What's wrong? What can we improve? What can we do? What can we make your lives better and thrive and grow, right? But right now on the forefront is all economy. And it's not a tariff thing. It's not a U.S. thing. We've damaged this country for the last 10 years on our own. We've done that proudly on our own by the Reds. And I know that, you know, the Reds are funding unions. I get that. I understand that. But we need to stand up as blue collar people and voice. And a lot of people are not voicing.
I think you have some good points. And I think also, too, that my being a construction representative of a local union, I more or less have to or should stay in my lane of employment for my membership.
My GPS goes everywhere.
Well, when it comes to local issues like that, I stay away from it. You know how it is, religion and politics and
some of them
and
just don't mix.
I'm more like, okay, what are you doing for my membership today? How can we work together on providing employment? That is my tunnel vision. If I veer off, then
for sure.
You know, I may fall into a pit.
I sometimes I feel like the internet ruined us too as workers, right? Because you go on the internet and you see, you know, somewhere in China, these guys built a 40-story building in 19 days, or another place in the world, they replaced an entire section of bridge in 48 hours. And there's videos of it, and you know, you got 10 cranes on the site, and you got a bunch of machinery and equipment.
But you know, I remember back in the days, it takes like 3 years to put up these office towers. Now, look at the CIBC tower. Within probably less than a year, you had the concrete structure and the glass up and
pump
that
is pump
unheard of.
A lot.
So yeah, there are new processes, new technology that makes us improve things and build it faster and probably, which I don't want to hear, probably less manpower too, right? So yeah,
well, that's another point.
We did a whole episode, Chris, on AI and robotics, and what the futurists.
We'll get into. I want to get into that, but before we get into, I don't want to get off on the other big problem with Canada in general. Mm-hmm. I love construction projects. I get excited about construction projects, and let's go back because you were here in '89.
Yeah,
I was a kid taking the GO to come into Eaton Centre to work as a busboy at Michel Baguette. Right? That's where I wanted to work because I got the job through my brother, right? So I would have to take the GO from Oakville all the way into Core. And I best part of that trip was looking up at the Sky Dome as it was being built, as each stage was being built. Yeah. I was loving it. When they were building the Sky Dome, and I will still call it the Sky Dome. I don't care about Rogers Center. No, when they were building it, I was in awe of it. I was paying attention to the technology they were using. They veered off and they didn't want to go new tech. They wanted to go old school tech. So that's why it's on railways, you know, the tracks and the wheels and everything, because it's foolproof. It's never going to fail. And here you go. Fast forward now. You're 35 years later and it's still operating correctly, right? It's a great structure. We need more of those kinds of structures. We don't need the typical box condos that are going up that have a huge amount of deficiencies. That I understand the deficiencies maintain a whole service sector of the industry, but we don't need that. We need structures that people are going to be hungry. The Crystal at the ROM, we need the Sky Dome. We need other structures, you know, repurposing the post office for ACC. You know what I mean? Like, we need more interesting structures, like a tunnel going from one end, and that's going to attract more people into construction, men and women. It's going to attract. We don't have that. We have the same cookie cut over and over. When you talk to global leaders or anybody else outside of Canada and you ask them, give me a list of the top structures that you've seen recently that you like forefront. Obviously, Birch comes up, right? The Line is coming up. But all these other structures, even London and UK, like their structures that they built, their towers, their landscape is different. Their skyline is different. Toronto's isn't. Toronto is a repetitive cut and rinse and repeat over and over. That doesn't excite construction workers. Construction workers get excited by building the Gardiner back in the 50s. They get excited about building the Sky Dome back in the 80s.
The Gordie Howe Bridge right now.
The Gordie Howe Bridge is a huge one.
Yeah, that's
so it's like we need architects. And I just want to bring up one little point. I do a lot of guest speaking at high schools because I get asked to go do it. And I love it. And we've been in those rooms, right? They're glazed. You know, they're not really listening to your conversation. Like, you're trying to give them insight into the industry, what to prepare. And, you know, the last one that I went to, and I'll bring up the female male, it was like, I can't remember, it was two females in the group, right? And then I went through every single one of them and I asked them, what sector of construction do you guys want to get in? Both females said engineering. All the men chose a trade, and majority of them chose recession-proof trades. So HVAC, electrical, plumbing. because they already were taught they'll have steady work for a long, long time. They will never have to stay at home if they choose one of those ones. But the women weren't interested in the trades. They were interested right in the engineering and architecture, interior designing, admin stuff.
Well, a lot of that too is well, certain women and other certain groups not going in the trade. Some of it comes from your teachers, probably. It comes from your parents.
You go back to the mentors.
Your parents,
yeah.
Who you people at your community center, your place of worship, etc. Your the TV, social media, yeah. Right? So, but what I think things are changing. It's not where it should be. If you look at the population, etc. No, men to women, 50% on each side. It's not where it could be, right? And yes, a lot of women will not be interested in being out there in minus 30 degrees. You know, that's an extreme, or plus 30 degrees.
There's lots of men that don't want to be here.
Exactly, right? So we have to be honest with ourselves, yeah. Right? But there are women out there who are really interested, who want the opportunity. And we just mentor them and go into the schools, like we say, the high schools and maybe even the middle schools. And I've seen where some of my colleagues at my office, whether it be the training center or union reps, go to the elementary school and talk to the kids at that level, right? You know, get them to just maybe squeeze the trigger on the screw gun. And it's fascinating to them, right?
I've joked about every elementary school should have a sand pit the size of a football field. So then the kids can just go in there and have different kinds of toys, trucks, whatever, excavators, and build.
Well, play around. Yeah.
That already plants the seed for interest in construction.
Yeah.
But nobody's doing that.
Well, if you don't, guess what? You're going to have to go offshore. And there's nothing wrong with it.
Let me ask you.
Give our local youth
a
chance.
In the years that you've been
first.
In construction on both sides of the fence, whether the executive or on the boots on the ground, has the interest of getting into construction taken a really hard slowdown in the last 10 years?
Like the impact on
just the impact people impact in general interest goals? Getting into construction, is there whether it's male, female, doesn't matter, but has the interest to get into construction slowed down?
I would not say it has been, because my opinion is if you run an ad saying you're looking for 100 people to get in a course to do formwork or to do framing or whatever aspect of carpentry, scaffolding tomorrow, and you tell them, yeah, there's a possibility, not a job, but a possibility of you going on a job, mm-hmm. of you making a first-year apprentice wage, which is half the journeyman, which is half of $50, you will have a line going around the building tomorrow morning. Yeah. So I don't think, the in my opinion, this saying that you cannot find people who are interested. You may have find people who don't have the skill, or you may have to go further in training them, and you may find people who are just trying to find themselves. But to say you will not find 100 people if you run an ad and tell them, meet me here at your studio, you're going to make $50 an hour plus pension, plus benefits. Oh, no, you will have a line going all the way back to the
QEW. But the two lines that I see in reality, though, is there's one line that are just taking the opportunity to make ends meet,
right.
Get a job,
right.
Whether that line is comprised of immigrants or other people, right? It's not going to be the majority of the construction workers. The shorter line is the lifers. The career construction people.
And that's
the
passionate one. That's what you have to sort.
That line, I think, has taken a really hard slowdown. The career construction person.
I don't know many. I don't know if I would.
They're not in this for the long game. The kids of today, like you mentioned about social media, there's a lot of competition to construction.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah. But it's going to come down to opportunity, man. And unfortunately, you know, and I don't want to shine a negative light on construction, but, you know, there is a certain group of construction that just go to construction because that is their only choice.
True.
Right? I didn't graduate high school. And going back to when I was in high school, and I remember the Toronto Star, and I think we talked about this on the show once. The cover of the Toronto Star, and this was probably back in...
Oh, I remember this, yeah.
Was I still in elementary school? I'll say back in 89, 90, around that time. And I remember the headline was, The Portuguese had the highest dropout rate in high school.
I remember
hearing Do you remember something like this, Chris?
I remember something
like that. The Portuguese had the highest dropout. This is horrible. The culture and da-da-da-da-da. But where did all these Portuguese people drop out to? They went to go work with their dads, and they went to go work in construction. And where are a majority of these Portuguese people now? Now they're rich and they own construction companies.
And they built huge and they companies. Build big Lifers, things, career right? construction, yes.
But I think, you know, the spin sometimes, you know, a lot of these spins get put on by people that aren't in the field or don't understand construction and this and then they just put a spin. Ah, the Portuguese had the highest dropout rate. Okay. but it worked out.
Yeah. And you hear that, you know, on one of the stations that plays it every hour, then you start believing it.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, it perception can be reality. But you just have to just do the right thing. And for me, I try to stay focused on the positive.
That's it. That's just all you can really do.
Stay focused on the positive and try to use my journey as an example to young people and encourage them to go forward and explain to them, be upfront. Explain to them that you're gonna have pushback. You're gonna have difficulties. Don't just tell them, look, you're gonna make 100,000-200,000 a year and it's gonna be a bed of roses. No. They're gonna be supervisors or colleagues that's gonna make your life hell.
There's gonna be some sweat.
And that is where mentor comes in. You're gonna have years where it's gonna slow down, right? And it's not that it's unusual, because you have to be honest. Whether you're working in an office or whether you're working in law enforcement, whether you're working in the hospitality sector, the health sector, you're gonna have challenges no matter where you are. So pair up young people with mentors and help them to get started, just like I got help, and just see where the chips fall.
But you know what? I think out of all the good points that were made today in this conversation so far, I really like that whole mentorship. And you know, you come out of training from a union hall or wherever it may be, and you get paired up with somebody and you spend time shadowing and learning and watching, and you know, you will pick up some good habits. You might also pick up some bad habits. Maybe safety, the mentor forgets to wear his eyeglasses or his safety glasses or whatever it may be.
His lanyard.
Forgets to tie off once in a while. But, you know, it is. And I think it's a great point. And I think I'd love to see more of that. And, you know, take your kids to school. I think that was great. Like, whoever came up with the idea of taking
your kids. They don't do that anymore, do they?
Sure they do.
They do still?
Yeah, man. I take
How many kids. Are construction workers?
I don't know about that.
See what I mean? I ask the question and there's hesitation because we just...
There's hesitation
there because probably
that
isn't.
Sector, number one, to be on a job, so you have to be 60. So that already eliminates a good portion of take your kids, because that happens a lot in elementary school, right? So there are some restrictions there, right? And construction, the second you walk on a job site, the chance of you dying just went up a few points, right? Yeah. So, you know, yes, take your kid to a construction project. The first time I was on a construction project, I was 12, 13. You know what I mean? I was a laborer for bricklayers. And, you know, for me, one of the things that I paid attention most was one of the bricklayers turned around to me and said, Philip, you know what? Books are lighter than all those bricks you're carrying. But he made a valid point. You know, books are lighter than the bricks. And it got me thinking. And, you know, my hands were bleeding. I had blisters. I was a laborer. I was climbing scaffolds and... Let's go.
I like what you're saying, right? Whereas sometimes when I go into high school, I explain to them, okay, you're an apprentice. You're a journeyman. When you become a journeyman, you're wearing your tool belt, your hard hat, and you're framing the wall, or you're building the box for your concrete, etc., or you're doing your trim. But it's up to you. You want to do that for the next 30, 40 years? No problem. Right, you can send your kids to university, pay your mortgage off, or, you know, live your Canadian dream. It's up to you. But if you want to work in other aspects of construction, you could go to night school. You could go do other courses at the training center, learn new skills.
Yeah, right? And for sure you can.
You know, you could be a safety representative. Sure. You could be an inspector for the government. You could be a superintendent. You could be a layout person. Oh, you could be a project manager. It's up to you where you want to take it.
That is definitely the beauty of construction. It's such a vast industry that you can jump from spot to spot to spot to spot, learn a bunch of skills, learn a bunch of trades. And again, you have to have the right mindset and the right approach to go out there and seize opportunity. And
I would also add, you have to have some thick skin, because there's going to be expressions heard and they're not offensive, but someone in today's climate will find it offensive.
So I'll give you a quick story. I was in this meeting where one worker was accusing the representative of being a racist. And the representative is saying, no, that's absolutely wrong, etc. He wanted to take it all away. So we're in the room and we're the legal counsel and says, okay, take a break. So I went downstairs. And my legal was outside having a smoke, and we're coming back in. And my friend, I won't call his name, he lives in
Nope, don't mention names. I don't need a knock on the door.
So he goes, he was in the lobby, and he came to see me, and he says, hey, buddy, how you doing? And I go, hey, how you doing? I haven't seen you for a while. I give him a hug. And then the lawyer turns around and look at me and says, you know, you could just see his expression. He went white. And I say, okay, we're going back upstairs now, Chris. Because you know what? My friend was from Newfoundland. And, you know, when he says, hey, bye, it's a greeting, like he does.
Oh, yep. I missed a greeting
like anyone, right?
Once you said Newfoundland, I know.
And so I get in the elevator and they're there and they're all tense looking at me. And I goes, that is one of the issues. You have to look at the context sometimes. Yes. Not all the time, but the context and the culture and the whole bigger picture, because you may be all wind up and ready to fire with both cylinders and not stop to review and see, hey, maybe I'm wrong on this, right? Don't get me wrong, there are gonna be bad people out there, right?
That's but different, sometimes that's you, pretty you blatant, have right? to
yes, but the, my colleague and the member never stopped to say, okay, maybe it was a different context. They apologized to each other and put it behind
which
them.
Which is fine.
So it's something you have to take into consideration. Not making an excuse, if you work in the industry, sometime take a second look. You never know.
Agreed. And you know, there are aspects of racism in construction. 100%. Just being an inspector and dealing with workplace violence and harassment investigations, you know, you get a bit of it, right? Just like in any other sector or any other thing.
Listen, in all fairness, but every industry.
Yeah, 100%. But
it could be educational, it could be construction, it could be anything. You know, there's aspects of all kinds.
You guys nailed it, man. You do have to take a look at it in context and not, you know, and see if it's something that was meant to be harmful or, you know, different contexts of how people will say things and treat you. And even as a rookie on the team on the construction, you're getting it. It doesn't matter what the Portuguese, white, this, that. It doesn't matter. You're the rookie on the team. You know, the older guys are going to put the screws to you a bit. I know, and I've seen people, you know, this is workplace harassment. My supervisor raised his voice at me and this and that. And you get that, especially, and you know what? Not for nothing, but you get that a bit from younger workers, right? They get, I guess,
listen, more. I'm sure you're probably aware of this, but I don't know, in Jamaican culture, it might be similar, but no. My friends would come over and the way my mom spoke to me or my siblings, a Portuguese woman has a certain octave level.
Yep.
And your friends would always ask you, why is your mom angry at you? I go, no, that's how she speaks to me.
Yeah.
But to somebody on the outside is going to be looking at it going, why is your mom angry at you? And she's like, angry. She's just a Portuguese woman. That's just how it is. And I'm sure the Italians are like,
no, don't put that on the job site. When the concrete's coming.
Maybe you have to like throw up a white flag when the concrete's laid or it's coming or something, because there's going to be a lot of colorful interpretation. For sure,
there's no place for racism.
And no, 100%.
And people that treat people just based on their skin color or whatever, where they come from, it's ignorant. But that being said, you know, construction's still colorful cast of characters.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And everybody, you know, finds their way. Some make it, some don't, unfortunately, right? In terms of, you know, the pressures of construction and the just the general nature of construction. Some people have a safety issue or a safety incident and they say, hey, I'm done with construction. I'm not going to risk my life again.
That's exactly right? It's true.
And there's different variations on why people or different reasons why people leave construction. And again, there's a lot of reasons why people come into construction. But money and job security has always been the biggest reasons to get into construction. And, you know, there's definitely some challenges being faced by workers and unions again. And, you know, I guess we're all just in the same boat trying to kind of unify right now and see which direction the construction industry hopefully is going up. I think that's the mentality.
Yeah, but don't get me wrong, though. Like, you know, I understand the cultural part of it. But we as a union, we're working to ensure or make every effort to ensure that everybody is respected. Sure. Everybody's mm-hmm. culture, background, religion is respected. And also to that is with support from the government, mm-hmm. you know, the provincial government, the federal government, and municipal government. And you can see when you go on a big job site, the orientation to the workers. Doesn't matter what, if you're a subcontractor or direct employee, you see through the orientation that it's explained what's required of you, and you can just feel the changes that's happening. And if it makes the industry better, I understand the cultural part and so on, but if it's makes the industry better and make it more of a welcome place for our daughters or sure. nieces or aunts or mothers on site, I'm 100% in support.
And I'm too. And the way my grandmother used to say it the best, a boy with some manners goes a long way.
Yes.
Right? And yes, you know, you can always inject a little bit more respect into construction. You can always inject a little bit more manners and, you know, because that sometimes those things go out the window really quick, right? But again, different
should be offensive on every little thing, though. What? Is I don't welcome it to be.
No,
everybody's definition of offensive today is a little too skewed for me.
That's what it is too. The tolerance level for certain things. Like we grew up, the shows that we watched on TV. Some of these shows, they cannot play these shows again on TV. Like even for South Park, for example, I like South Park. How is South Park still on TV after all these years?
It's satirical. That's why. Just like this show. I want to just bring up. You brought up a good point earlier about, you know, you want to get into construction, you want to be able to provide, you want to be able to buy a house, you know, retire at a certain age and things like that. The truth of the matter now is, though, in these hard economical times, these young tradespeople are not looking at a construction career at 30 years. You mentioned 30 year span, and I agree with you, that's what it used to be. But based on their dollars and them trying to figure out and people living longer, they can't retire at 30 years. They have to start looking at 40 years now. 40 years in construction swinging hammer is a very difficult career path. That's why I go back to saying they're leaving, they're not retiring,
so because like they don't want to retention issues.
Yeah, so they like, I won't be able to pay off my house based on what's going on economically. Like we know for a fact that back in the 80s you had a union person doing concrete, for example, because I had Barrett on the show recently, and he's a 22 year. And, you know, he was talking to the older guys because he learned a lot from the mentors, right? And he was telling them back in the 80s, he would make a certain amount and he would take home about $1,500 for the week. And back in the 80s, $1,500, you're wealthy. Yeah. You're doing well. Oh, yeah. That same worker today is taking home $1,700. And you fast forward almost 40 years. That's where the challenge is becoming for the tradespeople, where back then you could have bought a house for less than $100,000. You could have bought a brand new car for less than $20,000. You could have provided, you could have had a cottage. You could have had a bunch of stuff. Today, that's not the reality. You can't buy $1 million house. You can't spend $100,000 on a car. You definitely can't buy a cottage. You're probably not vacationing because you're only taking home so much. And doing the triple and doing the double time and the overtime, that's just more money for the government. That's not more money for your family and for yourself. That's where we need to start attacking where the truth of the matter is. I have a lot of respect for work. Like working with your hands, I have a lot of respect, but all levels, whether you're drawing or you're, you know, like that the pencil, that, you know, you can't build anything without the pencil. You need that. So all that infrastructure in the beginning, that has to happen. You need those smart people on the site to working with you. And I'm not saying that construction workers are not smart. They have a different degree. It's just a different degree. Just because you didn't have a hat on and you didn't have a ceremony and you didn't go through 4 years or whatever, you went through 4 years of hard construction work and you've learned skills that a lot of other people in this industry or in this country that have, they don't have it. That's why I've always told the young guys going, you know, you may be working for clients that might be consultants and maybe making $250,000 a year, but the truth of the matter is they don't have a clue how to build anything. Yeah. Nothing. They're the ones that are calling you to hang a picture.
Yeah.
I've had clients do that, right? Skills. So it's perception at that point, right? So don't ever diminish yourself as a construction worker. You have skills that a lot of other people don't have skills. We have 1.5 million people in this country that work in construction, all levels of construction.
In Canada?
Yeah, in Canada. It's 15, you know, in America, right? There's 250 million in total in the entire globe that work in construction, some capacity, all levels, industrial, commercial, low residential, high and low, right?
In Ontario.
Compared to 8 billion people on this planet. But those 250 million people keep this planet moving. Yeah. That's value.
Blue collar is always value. And blue collar during COVID, we saw what the value of was because they kept everything running.
Yeah, you make a valid point there because, you know, $1,500 then could carry you a long way compared to today, $1,700, and you still can't cover your expenses. But, you know, it's not just construction workers.
It's the whole, you know, a quarter million, right? The Toronto Council just gave themselves a 26% raise.
But they deserve the money.
But yeah, they haven't had a raise for a decade.
I would love to go to all the union members and all the construction workers and 1.5 million and I'll give them 26% raise.
But remember what I said? I stay away from the politics.
I get it. GPS is everywhere.
but yes, I understand, right? Inflation has gone up tenfold and it's not in sync with the money that we're making, but you know, I guess one of the things we have is for me anyway, at my stage of the game, where I'm proud of being, you know, a union member. I'm proud of being a president.
Yeah, 100%.
One of the things I'm very proud about is to be able to walk through downtown Toronto and say to my kids, grown man, let's say, I worked on this project. I worked on that project.
It never stops.
It's the best feeling. City.
My children are 7, and you know, I inspected that site. I've been on that site. Yeah. Grandpa's been there, and it's a great feeling. That's for sure. And you guys are right. You know, the money and challenges, and from the worker's perspective, you know, construction workers, I've bled and I've sweat, and for my union, and for this job, and for my employer, and now I'm still sitting here and looking to what the future is for me. What's the future for my family? What's the future for my kids?
Yes.
Right? And you know, I definitely, and I'm one of those people, because I'm definitely worried about the future of my kids, and I'm worried about the future of my company and the construction industry, because it goes hand in hand. But you know, like, I get the perspective, and I think, and I know we're not going to go too deep in, but I think that's why this negotiation, this round of contracts that are getting renegotiated with all the unions and all the trades and all the employers and developers and builders, it's an important one. This one's going to set the tone, right? And, you know, we like to stay positive.
I'll ask you a question, Chris. You don't have to answer. I'll ask you a question.
Yes.
I'm not a huge fan of the developers, but again, it's part of the cog, right? We need that. Without them, I find that there's a little bit of skewing going on. They feel that the workers are not as valuable as what they bring to the table. They're the ones that set the wheels in motion. They get the deals, they get the financing, they get the, you know, the permits and the bylaws and all the approvals, and they get all that stuff before the first hammer swung, right? I get all that stuff, but they need to respect the blue collar worker, that without them, you have no building, right?
That's correct.
And I get the sense, and my question is, I think the developers are putting the workers in a tough bind right now for the upcoming contract negotiations, that they're going to ultimately force them to accept whatever they're going to offer. And you don't have to answer the question. I just want to pose it.
Yeah. Well, let's see. I'm sure we're going to be having our meeting soon to determine what direction we're going to go when the numbers are brought forward. Again, you have older workers, and you have a large percentage of our membership or under 30 at this point. And they have a different perspective than the older folks who are close to retired. And we're hoping that that will come to a fair settlement. And, you know, it wouldn't be fair for me to express an opinion while our negotiating team is sitting at the table. But let's see what happens. And, you know, when at the right time, it'll all unfold, and we will see what not just the carpenters are bringing, but all the other construction trades are going to bring to the table.
I'm sure a lot of people are trying to stay positive, right? You know, but it's tricky. And it's tricky because, you know, you look at technology and how it's coming in. Well, you see the different pressures that are being applied to the workforce, whether it's AI and robotics, or whether it's the economy and interest rates, or whether it's inflation and how that's impacting, right? I feel like the worker is almost getting squeezed from every direction in terms of, you know, your way of life. And I get it. The challenges, you know. And
are you guys talking about robots?
I you know, as I was listening to him and he's talking about the economy and so on, my question was to both of you is, what's your opinion on AI and new technology? I have my opinion, but I
think it's going to replace a big chunk of the workforce. I honestly believe that in my lifetime.
Yeah, I think in the next 5 years.
I don't see it in 5 years because some things has to be done manually and it will take more than 5 years. But I think applying new technologies, new way of doing things with AI, I think it will increase, like we talk about the CIBC Tower, the speed and accuracy.
There's lots of pros.
As how buildings are constructed. And I think a lot of the different parts of the building will be done in a factory going forward and just be assembled quickly on site.
So it will.
The question is going to be, is that factory going to have workers or robots?
Well,
I was in a meeting where an individual is buying the very first machine that's coming to Canada, 22 million euro machine from Germany, fully automated, can build structures with brick, full brick on it.
And it pumps out the structure on the other side, like an assembly.
You have the auto industry.
It's already doing that.
It's way more than 5 years. It's automated, but you still have a percentage of.
Well, I don't think it's five. In there, I'm going to go 15 years where it's going to start to replace workers, and I say 15 because think about the iPhone introduction in 2009, and what the iPhone is today, and what smartphones are today.
Yeah, I think
15 years.
I think yes. We human beings are going to play a different role in a different role.
Yeah, for sure.
But hopefully the role doesn't reduce the labor force, or we will have to adapt. Right? Yeah. Before I didn't want to even touch the computer, the iPhone or the Android. But now I'm forced to probably put the address in and find out where it is. But before, my memory would tell me, okay, it's at this intersection. I know where to drive. I've been driving for a while. Now you get so used to it, you put it in and say, okay, turn left, turn right, and you get addicted to it. Yeah. So the same way you probably get addicted to the phone is the same way you're going to be addicted to quicker and probably smarter ways of doing things. I think we'll adjust.
I think so too. And you know, we did a whole episode on AI and robotics, and we took a look at the latest robots, and you know, these robots are breakdancing and doing moves, and we're looking at the factories in China, and they have what's called dark factories now. No lights, no nothing, just the robots pumping out cars. The lights are off and the robots are going. You should watch that episode that we did. It was really good. But the point that we ultimately, or not a point, but one of the points that we looked at was the only group that's going to be able to stop, I won't say stop, but at least hold it back and slow it down as much as possible is going to be the unions. The unions are 100%. the ones that are going to be the last line of defense to all these robots and all this technology and all these processes. Because yes, there's a ton of pros to robots and AI, but there's a lot of cons to society with the implementation of robots and AI, and job losses is huge, right? If you replace 5% of the workers in every sector in Ontario with robots or AI, that's a massive unemployment right? Like that's a, and we're just talking about 5%.
Well, the immediate part of it, it won't be, I don't think it's going to be on the jobs. I think the immediate part of it is assembling stuff in the factory.
Sure.
And that's where you're going to have the robots. But I think some of the stuff.
But if you can make that factory become mobile, which is actually a reality right now, I know about machines that are in C-cans dropped on site and producing product with one person operating that machine, when it would have taken, it becomes a self-checkout for construction. So now it's getting on the job site, which is replacing workers.
And just to go a little farther out into the left field deep end, you know, there's some people will argue that everything that is currently happening now in the economy and the workforce is kind of designed to reduce the workforce and give a pathway to robots and AI to come in, reduce the amount of cost of labor. And back to the point of negotiations and developers and stuff like that, you know, they may not openly say it, but they would love to see a reduction of labor. Hence the reason why employers like picking up illegal workers at Tim Hortons. $10 an hour. It's fantastic. Right? So there is developers out there that would love to drive down the price of labor. I'm sure they'd love to drive down the price of goods too.
And it's just, it's economics for business, while right? While
increase the price of the condos.
They have to just look at it like, okay, fine, I invest 22 million euros into this machine, but I've replaced this workforce.
Yeah,
and over time, this machine will pay itself after 5 projects. I'm just making up hypotheticals here. Yeah. But even if it replaces 10 projects in 10 years or something like that.
It's
which brings up another question I want to ask you. But I mean, again, you don't have to answer it. A lot of union people that I've spoken to on the mic or off the mic, because I get a lot of messages, they're genuinely nervous about their pension.
In the sense that
it won't be there.
It won't be there. At the moment, our pension plan is
it's stable. Growing.
Yeah, it's growing. It looks good. It goes with the market, and all pension plans goes with the market, right? The things are good. There's a lot of money being made, and a lot of money is paid into it. Things slows down, then the investments will reduce, and doesn't matter if you're with the teachers or the nurses or whoever, it's the same across the board. For growth, you know, it's a good idea to always be increasing your membership. And like you said, with AI and other technologies coming forward, that, you know, not today, but soon. 5-10 years later, it may be an issue, right? So
it's a conversation for today.
Something we have to pay attention to.
Yeah, it's an in-depth conversation for today.
There are issues, there are struggles, there's stuff that, you know, myself as a union rep, even though I've you know, traveled a lot of journey and so on, and I'm on the other end of the journey now, but I do have that concern, and I'm sure the younger generation has that in the back of their minds too.
Yeah, listen, as a parent, you know, my children are 7, and I'm already thinking about career choices and, you know, skills, and this has already been on my fore even before I became a parent. You know, which, how am I going to influence and mentor and steer, and, you know, and I find myself looking and saying, okay, maybe this career, and again, I can't force my children to do anything, but I can definitely make recommendations. I can definitely expose them. I can definitely, you know, do the best that I can to drive them towards something that's beneficial, productive, and they can be passionate about, right? But, you know, it's scary as a parent. You're looking at this like, what was it, 5 years ago, they were like, be STEM, programming. Everyone should be a programmer. They pushed programming like crazy. Fast forward 5 years later, hi, ChatGPT, can you write me an entire web? And boom.
Yeah, and I'm sure the same technology will write programs, and then a lot of jobs will be eliminated. Me, I got 4 sons and 1 daughter, and my daughter is a 4-year university student in Ottawa, and only one of my son went in the trades. I'd like all of them to, sure. to get in there. But one went in the trade, and he's doing well. He's a journey person this year, and he's working for one of the biggest formwork company in Toronto, and you know he's making a decent living, and I'm proud of him. And so yeah, I would encourage any of my kids to get in it, because I think it's a viable option of a career, and
I agree.
Yeah, and yeah, I'm proud of them. Just like I'm proud of you know the youths that I go and talk to in the schools to consider it an option. Don't just focus on the sexy careers that's out there. You know, consider it. And who knows? At least you got exposed when you're in high school. You know, you got exposed to how to use a drill, how to use a hammer, or to use a saw. And I think it's as a union president, I think things are going to be good.
But I think that the teachers or the mentors, whether it's at high school level or even at the union level, what they're not sharing and expressing is that construction isn't just about the drill and the hammer. You need to figure out how to design the next toy. So if you design a tool, a robot, or whatever that's construction relevant, you can have that experience being on the site and then contribute to new technology that's being implemented in tomorrow's construction. Mm-hmm. That's being in construction construction.
Yeah.
So you're getting ahead of the robots, and now you're basically designing stuff. Like that's how we all know the story of the drill. The drill came from NASA. They needed a cordless drill to be operated in space, right? So that filtered down to Formula One, filters down to your Honda Civic. Like all this technology comes from an idea, but you have to get the spark in the kids. The kids have to come up with the spark. And in my opinion, they need to be on the job site to experience what the job site is really about and what's missing. I used to do that all the time when I got on sites on how to improve certain things. Like what's the new technology? And then I started visiting all the trade shows. Then I started speaking to, you know, companies and brands. And then I would invite myself to factories and go on tour and see where everything was going. That's where this next generation. So there's a next generation of construction workers that we haven't even tapped into yet, that they're going to change the landscape of construction.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be a big group that sooner or later
we need those come. People.
That generation is going to, some may say for the better, some may say for the worse.
I think it's for the better. I think it's totally for the better. Then we'll have infrastructure projects here in Toronto and Canada and everybody and every that will shine a huge light on the global stage. I think that's what's missing.
Let's see how it plays out.
Well, so, we're not bad here in Toronto. We're not. When you look at the bigger picture, we're not bad. If you go other European countries or even some cities in the States, on average, we're comparable.
Well, which metric are we using here? Which metric, Chris?
In what respect? What do you mean, Chris?
Transportation, you know, roads.
Transportation here, we're not bad.
We have the worst
transportation.
You get stuck in traffic just as much.
No.
I guess it all depends where you're traveling. And your trajectory.
Toronto is terrible.
One thing's for sure.
Housing costs. Some cities.
Terrible here.
Housing costs.
We're number one. Aren't we the most expensive right now?
Jump into other continents. And it's like.
I feel like all of those are in a bubble though. And.
But is there anything else you want to share before we wrap it up? I know we've taken way too much of your time, but it's been an enjoyable conversation. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
We got lost here in all of these different perspectives.
I mean, if there's any, I think we touched upon a lot of the points.
We touched on all of this, but now it kind of brings us into our final last two segments of Safety Corner. And Chris, you're going to have to kind of bear with us.
Contribute.
Because this section that we deal with is always the different bulletins that come out from the Ministry of Labor in terms of. We had to dig for this one because there isn't, fortunately, that many, I guess, or a lot of prosecutions. But we always delve into a court bulletins and just kind of see what the roles of the employer were, what the roles of the worker were, and what happened, and kind of a bit of a background on that case. And yeah, so that's what we kind of...
See, this is a key thing, Chris, for me, that I've seen this happen where certain programs don't tell the reality of construction. And we know construction can be dangerous.
Yes.
It's a very dangerous career option, right? But if you're educated and you've been trained by the right people and you learn the skills and the experience, you can avoid being on these particular details that we're talking about where there is injuries, there is fatalities, it's part of that, right? Uh-huh. And you know, like I want that expressed to the kids. I want them to know that we're just being honest with you. We're just letting you know that, you know, if you do this, A, B equals C. Yeah. Like, don't be touching that. Don't jump on that. Don't jump on a job site if there's no guardrails, if there's no, like, be aware, speak up. Don't worry about it. Like, you're not snitching anything. You're just, you're making the site safe. Everybody has to watch out for their brothers and sisters all the time. So a lot of that is not expressed. A lot of that is not told about, you know, frozen poop in the dead of winter in the job site toilet. Yeah. That's an experience in itself when you want to experience it for the very first time. A lot of kids are like, oh, I don't even want to look at that ever again. But I want the good and the bad because then they can make it better. Yeah. That's what I want.
You got to learn from both sides of the coin for sure. Yeah. So sorry.
Go ahead. It's right. A lot of it depends on the sector. A lot of it depends on the location. A lot of, for instance, I'm sure you wouldn't find you wouldn't find a certain work condition or safety, not safety, washroom facility in certain condition. You wouldn't, it's highly unlikely you'll find it on Elliston or PCL site, big site downtown. Most of the time, you running water to wash your hands, flushable toilets, etc. Right? Maybe lower budget projects where, you know, it's there isn't much room or that's not paid attention to. Yes, you're gonna find, you know, workers sometimes, not all the time, workers that's not trained properly, workers that are not exposed to what's required in terms of safety. It's going to happen, right? I think the information that you brought up, I think it's in Kitchener and more in Toronto. However, I think there was a bit of neglect I think that the worker, not to blame the worker, but clearly the worker, if he received it, he didn't follow through on not standing up for himself enough, right? But the reality of it is sometimes a worker may just want to make some money and go home, and he may neglect to get tied off or you know, because he's being pressured to get the job done too, right? I'm not gonna, you know, go off in a ICI realm of mine where, you know, the safety percentage of you falling is much lower, right? But the reality of it is, like you mentioned, folks jumping on the truck at the Home Depot, what's the chances of those men getting safety training? And even if they do, what's the chances of them adhering to it, right? We have to be honest with ourselves, right?
Different sectors, different groups of workers, illegal workers definitely are the most vulnerable workers. And that's a term that the Ministry of Labor has used for a very long time to describe that specific sector or group, vulnerable workers. And you're correct. There are a lot of pressures that workers face. It could be that they're taking chances, they're taking risks. And in this current economic environment, job security may mean or equal greater risk.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You'll take more chances to keep that job. And you can look at it on the flip side too. The employer is not providing safety equipment or not providing training or whatever it may be. But, you know, as you well know, and all you guys know, you listening to me especially, you know, we all have duties and responsibilities for the different workplace parties. And you know, in this current economic environment, what we're finding in terms of safety is that safety is going down, right? It's job security, risk, probability, pressure for the worker to complete this task within the time frame, or it's additional workloads. It could be a variety of different things. But, you know, some stats, we were at a conference the other day, and the CPO office put out some stats. They haven't released them yet, but they're going to be released soon. And unfortunately, fatality average is still 23, and criticals is still 200 plus per year in Ontario. And
it's still fall. No, fall to death. Falling electrical.
Oh, number one highest killer contravention. Falls is still number one.
Yeah.
You're still looking at falls, electrocution, struck by, crushed by, trench collapse.
Yeah.
The top four, right?
Yeah, those are the top four, top five killers of workers. But it's still happening. And this case, this one was from 2024. And let's just kind of jump into it. Matt Pohl was the constructor on a project installing a metal roof on a single family home. Matt Pohl subcontracted another roofing company to complete this work. On April 6, 2022, a worker from the subcontracted company was installing metal sheathing on the second story roof of the building when they fell to the ground and suffered fatal injuries. So there you have it. Number one killer of workers still. So Ministry of Labor, Immigration, Training, and Skills Development investigation found that while fall protection equipment was available on site for use at the time of the incident, the worker was not wearing fall protection when they fell through the roof. Excuse me. Madpole Metal Roof Manufacturing failed as a constructor to ensure that where a worker is exposed to a fall more than 3 meters and is not practicable, a tongue twister, to install a guardrail, the worker shall be adequately protected by a method of fall protection as required by Section 26.1 sub 2. Right? So what do you guys think? What do you think was the fine to this company for a worker fatality?
Whether it be 50 or 100,000, you know, having a fine, it's an appropriate action. However, that doesn't bring back the life of that individual. That family is going to be traumatized for the rest of their lives, right? So, but yes, you should fine, or you must fine the individual that's responsible, that played a role in that worker's death, absolutely. You know, we must take action going forward to ensure that one death is too many.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And that comes down to enforcement. Yes. And the MOL these days, their enforcement branch, especially in the GTA.
Yeah, but it's enforcement on all levels, from the developer, the builder, the sub, everybody.
But, you know, the developer
is a private home, though.
Yeah, it's different. I get it.
But then you look at the news on the weekend, and a hydro worker.
I heard about that.
Electrocuted. Right?
I know.
The circumstance, I'm not really privy to the details, but still, one dead is too many, right? Mm-hmm. This young lady was a union rep for the Power Workers Union. She communicated with us on the weekend that she, as soon as it happened, she was rushing to the hospital to see the family of the person who survived, etc. Right? So, yeah, it's tragic. And you know, hopefully we learn from it and make sure that, you know, we close that loophole that caused it, if it's possible, right? Because it may be mechanical. You don't know.
Well, no, the investigation obviously reveals after the investigation is concluded, then, you know, charges are recommended and laid. And, you know.
So the workers at fault in this situation for not wearing the harness?
I don't know all the particulars. There could have been a supervisor there that failed to ensure that the worker was wearing the required fall protection, you know? There's a couple of variables here, right? But one thing that has not changed in all my years of doing this is the average fine for a fatality. So the average fine for a fatality has always been in the area of $150,000.
Yeah.
Right? When the max fine is $2 million.
Yeah.
Right. So, and the criticals, your average fine for a critical is anywhere between 50 to 75,000. 75,000 these days. But that's usually your average. If you look at all the cases spanning back the last 10 years, that's still your average. So, even though the max fines have gone up, the average fine to an employer in a fatality has not gone up.
Okay.
Right. So, there are some discrepancies here. But in this case, Manny,
it's going to be at a zero.
Manny, whatever the fine is, always just wants to add a zero at the end of it.
Because I'm with you, Chris. Yeah. It's not the loss of the person. It's the loss of the family. It's the loss of everybody around.
Yeah.
It's that. And I don't think these fines are enough. Like, look at it should be 1.1 million.
Yeah.
If the max is allowable is 2 million, it should be 1.1 million in this situation.
Listen, this is a 90% discount. 95.
Yeah. Or maybe Jail time will make people.
I've already expressed
that supervisor, the last one that got 5 years. So Metron supervisor got 3.5 years, Vadim Kaznelson. And now the most recent one, which was, 3 weeks ago we were talking about it? Okay. I tell you, he got 5 years criminal negligence.
Good. Yeah. That will deter you right away.
That would make you enforce safety a lot better in the next project, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But listen, safety is always, it's an uphill battle. And, you know, like my father used to say, it's like water hitting a stone. It takes a long time to make change and make progress. And you have to be persistent and keep going at it. But there's definitely challenges from the perspective or from MOL enforcement and how frequent they're on projects and how frequently you're enforcing the act and the regulations and the number of inspectors compared to the number of projects. This has always been a challenge, even when we were there. And when I was there, it would take 150 years for the Ministry of Labor to inspect every single workplace in this province. Right, which is some crazy numbers. But hopefully that's changing, and hopefully, you know, we can prevent this, because prevention is definitely key. Yeah. But unfortunately, it's still unfortunate.
I'd love to see zero injuries, zero deaths.
I think we all would.
Yeah.
Right? But what does that look like?
We got to wrap it up. Thank you very much, Chris. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
No, thank you for the opportunity to express my opinion, and thank you for having me. And you know, I want to thank my membership, as usual, for my membership, my leadership, my executive boards for supporting me. And you know, I appreciate you, Phil, Manny.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, thanks. I think we just really, for the purpose of this, we just really wanted to talk.
Yes.
And have an open conversation and see where it goes. And I think this is a great interview.
Thank you. It has been a good chat. Yeah, for sure.
And that's a wrap.
Thank you. That's it.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
You're listening to Safety Corner, powered by TCL and S1. For workers, by workers. Online and in-person health and safety programs and training available in 10-plus languages. Reach out to them at www.mys1.ca and DM them at my_S1 for more information.